Hi, it's Jason Nemro. Making a recording. What is today? It is Sunday, October 12th. Just got woken up. I'm on call from work, so they woke me up at some ungodly time of the morning. Actually, it's not. It's only 4 in the morning. I'm usually up anyway. And thinking about the full stature of manhood. I think this will be my next writing project. I actually have always have a few writing projects going, sometimes really large ones. But we're working on the full stature of manhood because this thing is so desperately important. Really kind of a call to arms for men. If you've listened to any of my recordings in the past, of which I used to make tons of them, now I don't make so many anymore, because it just doesn't come up. I don't have opportunities to make big recordings like I used to. I found myself really quite upset with gay men. Now I do gay in air quotes. That's a I don't think that's a good way to label anybody. I don't think that's a good distinction at all. I put it right up there with people who pick up big clods of like cow dung and mush it into people's faces. I put it right there at that level. So I certainly don't want to accuse people of being that low. But it happens, people are going out and honestly going out and saying, I go out and I pleasure myself in quasi-sexual ways on whoever I can get to talk into it. And don't mean to I know that they want to be held in higher esteem than that, but that's how they define themselves. That is the label that they use. They could say, "I'm a good person." They could try to put that first, but they don't. They say, "I'm gay. I'm coming out of the closet. I'm gay." Ooh, and it's like, why would you want to make that the basic identifier of you? I do understand that, there's groups of people that they identify themselves that way, and to become part of their group, that's how you do it. I'll freely admit that these may have been people who had been abused as children, who may have grown up in broken families, there's all kinds of pain in life. And it is the question of how do we define that pain, and do we hang it around our necks and show it off as some kind of excuse for who we are and what we do and why we're not doing better. I'm not saying I'm some paragon of anything, but I found that it's important in life to try to transcend where you came from and try to rise, try to become better, greater, strive for something higher. And sadly, when we label ourselves with things like "Hi, I'm gay," that is actually a little sign that you put on that says, "I am obsessed with something low," and that's sad. It's like, let's say that you lived in a really impoverished country where there were very few opportunities to do something, and that somebody came and said, "Hey, there's this wonderful opportunity. We can take you to some place with really good education with really good opportunities so that you can better yourself. And it's like telling that person, hey, you know what? Poor, decrepit, and sick is what I am. Piss off. You know? And it's like, how utterly foolish of you to do that when there's this opportunity to rise. People do it every day for 1,000 different reasons. And it's sad to see. And this being, I'm sorry, I'm going to put a proper label to it. Being a sexual pervert is one of those things, one of those low things. You could do better. But you're sitting there choosing, and not just choosing, proselytizing, flaunting the fact that you're not gonna rise, you're not gonna try, you're not gonna do more, do better. That's just sad, you know. And if you're upset by the term sexual pervert, my advice is don't do it. And I know this sounds kind of screwball, but stop flaunting it. Stop advertising it. You know? I pleasure myself sexually with people of my own gender. Oh wow, boy, broadcast that one. Isn't that a great thing? I understand the allure of pleasuring. I understand the headiness of belonging to a group. It's probably a very easy group to belong to. And that's probably one of the things that says it's not much of a, you know, it's not much of something to aspire to because it's so easy. You know, I belong to the Amalgamated Federation of Oxygen Breathers. If you breathe oxygen, you can be part of our group and we'll get together and breathe oxygen together. Isn't there something we can stand for that's a little higher than that? Isn't there something a little higher that we can stand for than pleasuring our genital region? Than stuff like that? And I don't want to downplay the fact that one finds membership, a sense of belonging with people like that, but it's no good, you know. It's like belonging to a gang. You know, you say, yeah, they gave me a purpose, they gave me something to do with my life, you know, they take care of me. And you go, that's fine. It says, I understand it from that level, but is it good? Is it making you a better person? And you go, well, no. And you go, okay, then you need to stay away from you need to find groups that actually ask you to do more. That's why I'm a Latter-day Saint, is because, well, you know, I was raised in it, of course. Certainly had choices all along the line to say, you know what, I don't have to show up if I don't want to. I don't have to do these things. But I choose to, and one of the biggest reasons is because it gives you something bigger and better to be about. It's also, I believe it's true, and I believe it's what God wants us to be doing. It's part of a larger development program to make us into people like He is, like Christ is, like God is. And that's what we're shooting for. We're not shooting for lowness here. We're shooting for the pinnacle. And I have a God that doesn't have a problem with that. If you have a God that says, hey, trying to be a good person, trying to even be better than that, trying to be God-like is a sin, and I will strike you down if you try to be like that, then that's your religion and happy day for you. But I'm trying to go, I'm trying to transcend, I'm trying to become something better. And that's what we want all people to do. Now I'm going to sit here and talk as if I'm talking to a man who has professed to be gay. And so when I talk about you, things like that, just know that I'm talking to kind of a fictitious person that's sitting in front of me. We have a chance to sit down. We actually have a chance to talk heart-to-heart. And I don't know how often that's going to happen because these are very tender-hearted people. This is actually, they're you know, like I said, it's very, being a part of the gay community is very attractive to outcasts. To people who have felt like they've been rejected in the past. This is a group of people that doesn't tend to reject very readily. You know, because it's easy. You know, it's like I said, it's like the amalgamated brotherhood of oxygen breathers. You know, easy to meet the entrance criteria. Of course, you've got to be a sexual pervert to do it, but, you know, that's... And that's just as addictive as of a problem as pornography. It's just as addictive a problem as drugs. It goes right with that kind of thing. You don't have to pay for it. It's you see, it's so easy. If you had to join a group that did a lot of drugs, you might not be able to because there's a certain price that has to be paid. Somebody has to buy those drugs. And it's expected that you're going to cough up your share when it comes to being sexually perverse. There is no cost to it. It's absolutely free. All you have to do is to surrender to it or to be willing. And is that high? Is that a transcendent thing to do? And no, the answer is no. You know, any group that basically teaches you to surrender to something, I think you need to be skeptical of it. And I don't mean to be rude to Christians, because I know that for many Christians that is a tenet of theirs, that you surrender yourself to Christ. I don't like that sort of terminology when it comes to it, because you're going to end up doing things. If you're doing things that Christ wants you to do, I don't see that as a surrender at all. I see that as an active effort toward being a better person, toward rising. And I don't see that as a surrender at all. The things that, you know, as I... I don't think there is that, you know, if you're an evil person, you're willfully evil, and you, quote, surrender to Christ, I guess that's a good first, second, third step toward just not being evil anymore. But at some point, you need to start being good, doing good. And when you start doing that, that's not a surrender anymore. That is almost a partnership. It's almost a working relationship, working together. And I think that's what we're going to talk about here. Let me go back to the idea of that third world country where you say, I'm not, you know, I'm going to stay right here. You know, this is what I am. You write down the name of that country and maybe your poverty level around your neck, and you hang it there as if it's not a prize, but some great identifier, something you're proud of. You have to understand that when we talk about gay pride, that's what we're talking about. Look at what I do, and I'm proud of this. I'm proud of the fact that I can pleasure other people in a perverse sexualized way. I'm proud of that. I'm sorry. I don't understand why that should be given the thing of pride. If somebody were to say, you could do better with your life, you could... let me get to the very crux of it. About being a man. This is all about the full stature of manhood. Is what you as a man, and that is part of your nature, you to put it in gross terms, you have a penis. Use it properly. And the whole point of well, not the whole point, but one of the big points of having of being a person that has feelings that way, sexuality, intimacy, possibilities for intimacy, is that we're supposed to be using that to complete someone of the opposite sex. And produce children. This is a great responsibility. It is a great it's a great definer. As far as I know, it's what turns boys into men. Until you do that, I think you're still kind of functioning to some degree like a boy. You know, you haven't really taken on the adult responsibility of life, of growth. And I know people struggle because we don't have a good concept of what God is. God's a man. It's an exalted man. He has children, so I'm sorry. Whether you like the concept or not, whether it bothers you or not, grow up. If he has children, he has a wife. God doesn't set up weird structures down here that and tries to get his children to follow them without there being that coming from a larger pattern. But you have a mother up there too. Now, we don't sit around, we don't worship our heavenly mother. That doesn't happen. But the fact that that group is there, you're his child in a very real way. You know, it's not that he's some mist and he wants you to call him father because it's cute. No, he is the father of your spirit. That part of you that is you came from, well, came from him. He was a part of your forming that. Now, who you are is even larger than that, but let's just go with that for a minute. Come down here to earth, whatever sex you are, a gender, pardon me, let's not use the word sex too much because it excites people in strange ways. Whatever gender you are, whether you're male or female, that you definitely are that. Now, there are very few where it's a little confusing, but typically, and almost without problem, your gender was determined at birth, and that is set. And as that, there's certain things you have to do. If you're a man, at some point, you are supposed to couple with a woman. Now that's a low way of saying it. Please don't use that as an excuse for, oh, well, this is why I do it. You know, I'm not condoning being a gigolo, being a, you know, an escort, any more than I'm saying that one should engage in sexual perversion. I'm not trying to prop up. I'm not trying to say one is better than the other. You know, if something is bad and if something keeps you down and keeps you from realizing your full potential, it's just bad. Both things do that. There are so many women who want more, who have had bad lives, came from maybe abusive families, have had terrible things happen to them, have had horrible experiences with men, or didn't have a good father, or stuff like that. They are often easy marks for a lot of things. Becoming lesbians, becoming overly sexualized, prostitution, because in our culture we keep equating being a sexual creature with love. We are hoping that love that sexuality leads to love. It rarely does. We can play like it does, but it by and large doesn't. It's a bad start, and you're going to have to work through a lot of garbage to turn that into something authentic. You know, you're going to have to work through a lot of tough feelings to get there. There's a lot of hurting people. Women especially feel, I don't think men feel it as strongly, this whole need to be complete. For women, it has to do with being loved, it has to be doing with being cared for, with feeling good about themselves. It has to do with having children and stuff like that. Now, our society has gone so far as to screw up almost every part of that. And it's sad. It's sad. Society could be a tool for good. It's turned out to be really kind of a tool for evil, to the point to where I say anything that society is telling you to do, you should probably ignore that, because it's probably wrong. And it's sad to think that we've gotten to that point, but I think it has. Because we say, well, women should go out, and it's easy, you know. It's like, you know, let's start a club of women with children. It says, well, that's an easy one. All you have to do is get knocked up. And that's easy. You know, any number of men, over-sexualized men, who are just looking for a new voyeuristic adventure, can offer that to you. So, you know, just like being gay, just like being an oxygen breather, it's an easy club to join, but it's a heartbreaking one. When one looks at themselves and says, I'm nothing, you know, they go out and they look at people who have tried harder, who have made better decisions, and they go, I wish I was her, I wish I was him. And sometimes our choices make that a difficult road to follow. But we can get closer. I did an essay not too long ago, actually a long time ago, about the ideal versus the optimal. The ideal is the best. It's having the best. It's doing the best, trying to do the best. And often that has to do with decisions that we've made in the past. We don't do much about the ideal anymore. It's just not there. It's all about doing what makes you feel good. And so, I was talking about in relation to marriage, because, you know, we're talking about marriage, and now, quote, gay people are saying that they should get married, they should be able to be married too. And a lot of jurisdictions have decided that that's true, that that's only, quote, fair. And it's sad, because it actually encourages people, or tries to purport to people, that engaging in sexual perversion with a piece of paper is just as honorable and just as good to government, to society, to life, as doing the transcendent thing, which is completing women, bringing children into the world and creating an environment where that is a blessing and raises everybody. Men need to marry women and honor that commitment in order to become men. I'm sorry, it's just the way it is. It's just the way you're built, honestly. You know, if you're saying, hey, I'm gay because I was born this way, and you go, you know what, you were also born another way that actually engenders something better. You know, better things. I'm always losing my train of thought. That's why I'm a writer. Good speakers are wonderful. I'm not one. So I'm trying to get these down so I can put this in a book. It's about the completeness and about what we do. The full measure, the full stature of manhood is that we do these things that we seek out a mate of the opposite sex. Thank you. We do things to strengthen that relationship. That's what marriage is about. It's about coming together and saying, not only do I choose you as my mate, these are all very low terms, and I don't like using them particularly, because it can be so much higher. But I feel the need to use low terms so that I don't offend people. And of course, I'm going to offend the heck out of them anyway, so what difference does it make? Anyway, a committed marriage, you know, that's just the term for it. It's a marriage. In my belief system, it's supposed to be an eternal thing. You are not just giving yourself to this person and saying that we two are going to be one, and that we are going to work together. Her pains are my pains. Her successes are my successes. My successes are her successes. You know, it's not just for this time. It's for all time, beyond time. God can make that happen. You can sit there and go, well, you're just saying it. That's true. I said, no, I know that God can make that happen. How do you know that? Well, this is... Well, I can tell that you're never going to know very much for sure, because you're not willing to find out. You're willing to poo-poo things as soon as there's any kind of evidence that you don't know how things really run. I apologize. Let's stay on track. But that really is part of the track, is saying there's something bigger, something better, and you need to aspire to it. Now, you need to know that in that aspiration, becoming that kind of a person is actually a very humbling thing. And that if you're cocky, that's not going to last long, because it just won't get you there. Being cocky doesn't do it. Having the aspiration is very important. Some people think being humble means that you don't aspire to anything. You know, oh, well, I'm not a pushy sort. And you go, it's not about being pushy. It's about having a goal and working toward it. And it's a good goal. It is the greatest goal that one can have. And several of the most important aspects of it is to be a husband, to be a father. And it's sad that I have to sit here and define what these things are now. We used to know what they were. Now we don't. Being a husband, that means you're married to a woman. A man married to a woman, and totally committed to her. She is the number one person in his life. He doesn't have sexual relations with any other person besides her, the person that he's married to. And that something good comes out of that relationship. We're talking about children. It ennobles that whole group. And that's more important than anything else. It gets lost in definitions and how we look at things and people who get all political about it and say, well, we need to be fair, we need to do this, we need to do that. And you go, well, you know what? Marriage between a man and a man, the legalization of that coupling, and it's not a coupling, actually, you know, we're always trying to be so kind to these people, you know, and I don't want to be immediately just mean, but that's why I use the term sexual pervert, perversion, things like that. These perverse legal activities, let's call what they call gay marriage that. Perverse legal entanglements. As a substitute for marriage, it's just bizarre. Anyway, it doesn't produce children. It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't ennoble anybody. It just gives you a convenient, cheap way. I remember Dr. Laura was really very poignant, and I know she offended tons and tons of people, and that's good. These are people that need to feel offended by their own doings. She called it shacking up, you know, and she didn't want to make it better by trying to make it sound, oh, you're living with some guy, okay. And you go, no, you're shacking up. It says, what you are is an unpaid whore. That guy gets to have, you should call it friends with privileges, which means that you live with somebody and you get sexual favors for them. From them, and apparently you're not paying for it. So she says, yeah, you're basically an unpaid whore. Says, boy, is that low. It says, at the very least, he should be paying you for that kind of service, you know, if you're going to be doing this. It says, because I'm sorry, this stuff is not an ennobling thing. It's not born of love. It's born of sexuality. And it's right up there with rape. It's right up there, you know. There is only that little slide from saying, oh no, it's consensual, to saying, oh no, I forced myself on somebody, or they forced themselves on me. A whole body of law is now over trying to determine if it's actually consensual or not. Nobody's saying that marriage is amazing and wonderful either. It can be. It can be. When you marry better people that are striving for better things. And I want to, you know, it's important to define those kinds of things, to define what better is, and to encourage everybody to move toward it. You know, we've all made mistakes. We've all done problems. Sometimes they're big whoppers. Sometimes we can be, I'll go ahead and give the proper terms to them, at least the godly terms for them. Adultery, fornication, things that people don't like to hear said. You know, oh, you shouldn't, we don't use that word. It's got a bad connotation. And you go, it should have a bad connotation. It's a bad thing. Just like being gay. You know, when people were engaging in these kind of sexual shenanigans, there was a reason why they were in the closet. They put themselves there because it was something that was supposed to be hidden, because it was deplorable, it was despicable, it was antisocial, it was low. Still is these things, but now we've propped them up and we now cheer them and say, oh, isn't that wonderful? All these things, like being like the pornography and the stuff like that, it all has to do with free and easy sexualization, and that's where gayness is a part of that. It's a part of that. The fact that it's becoming socially acceptable doesn't make it any better than what it's always been. It's always been part of that whole cluster of things. You know, and it's something to be overcome. So I'll be really revealing, and I'll do this in the book too, about leering. I used to leer at women. Well, I'm not going to give specifics for Pete's sakes, you know, but okay. You've probably seen the thing. Somebody like driving down the street and they see some girl walking and, you know, she's dressed provocatively perhaps. You know, stiletto heels. Whatever tends to make you think that somebody is attractive. And I would look. And, you know, when you would drive past, you would know that you were looking because your head, you know, your face would follow that person, even though you should have your eyes on the road. It would follow that person. You know, and I'm sorry, you know, people always say, oh, that's natural. You know, we go by a construction site and they all go, you know, and they all wolf calls and stuff like that. And that used to be considered, it was considered low, but it was anticipated, sadly. It's low, shouldn't do that, because, and I came down to it, I said, that's leering, that's leering at somebody. You shouldn't do that. When I got married, and pretty shortly after I got married, you know, and it was just a habit, you know, you'd always say, wow, she's cute. You know, my wife got really upset with me, you know, and she just sat me down and told it to me straight. She goes, you married me. The only person you should have those kinds of ideas and those thoughts and those sorts of reactions to is me. And I still am. I have attracted to my wife. Now, I don't have to be. Is my wife a gorgeous person? No. She, you know, she isn't. You know, I'm sorry. I don't think my wife is plain. I like my wife very much. I think she's beautiful and she's wonderful. But it's not just a physical, you know, face sort of a thing. Or a body sort of a thing. She's wonderful in so many other ways. And she, you know, I can't praise my wife enough for the person that she is and how I feel about her. But of course, that's built up now over, nearly 26 years. In fact, we're getting ready to hit 26 years here shortly. And I was leering. And I had to teach myself not to do that. I'm not saying it was an easy road. And I said, you know what? You're right. You're right. I need to stop doing that. You know, I don't know if I was very good about it or if I was very upfront about it, but I think it got to the point to where it's like, well, you're going to need to help me. You know, and you need to understand that I've got this problem and we need to work on it together. And that's really what is the transcendent thing about these relationships that doesn't happen with gayness. Or that if it does, it's this weird, strange thing where people go, I don't understand why I need to be loyal to you. We weren't being loyal to each other when we started. And I shouldn't be loyal to you now. You know, I started having deviant sexual-like activities with you because that's what I like. If you're, you know, if you're saying I'm only supposed to get them from you, I'm sorry, that's probably not part of the bigger bargain. The bigger bargain was I'm supposed to be being pleasured, and different people can pleasure me differently, and that's really cool, and that's what one's after. And that's, you know, that's low, that's degenerate, that's why we call it deviancy. That's why we call it a perversion. It's a perversion of proper sexual relations within marriage. It shouldn't take place outside of that construct because it's bad. It's just like the whole leering thing. If I would have continued doing that, it would have ruined my marriage. We already had, you know, we were working on children. And I'm sure that my wife, I'm not sure I would have thought about this. I don't know how many men think about this. Just by nature, we have to be brought to this point. I think women think about it naturally. To say, I'm going to have this child and this guy's going to leave me. This guy's going to leave me chasing some skirt. Because he's looking. He's looking. I mean, he may look at me too, but I'm only one of several people he looks at. And it's leering. He leers at. At some point, I'm going, you know, I'm going to be pregnant. I'm going to have a big old belly. I'm not going to want to get up early in the morning and spend hours making myself into a goddess. You know? And all of a sudden, some little nubile, flat-tummied girl is going to be more interesting to him, and he's going to leave me for her, you know. And maybe he cares about the fact that I'm carrying his child. Maybe he won't. You know, statistically speaking, things aren't so good. Things aren't so good that way. You know, men leave on a regular basis. They leave more often than they stay. And, you know, boys, I'm sorry, I need to say that. Boys leave more often than they stay. Men who are committed to their wives, who are committed to their marriages, and who are committed to the children that are produced by that, and that creation stays, that marriage, that family stays together through thick and thin. That's what you do. Now, the transcendent thing is that you don't do things. Sorry, man, us, we, you, me, you and I. We don't do things to make that difficult. Marriages suffer horribly under addiction, abuse. Oh, those three things. I love Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura has such a wonderful way of just with laser vision, just getting right exactly to the crux of things. Abuse, addiction, and adultery. Nothing worse than those three things. Those are excellent reasons to divorce somebody. Says now, you know, it would be nothing for a male, I'm not going to call them a man, it would be an easy thing for a man child, a boy, to pick up one of these things if they decide they wanted to have sex with somebody else. Hey, it's easy. I'll commit adultery. Happens every day. Anymore, society doesn't even blink at it. They expect you to be adulterous. They don't expect you to be loyal to your wife. They expect you to say, oh, well, you know, she's this person. She nags him. She makes life difficult. You know, she's always demanding stuff. She doesn't even try to look good anymore. You know, she's starting to gain weight. You know, that happens because of age. It happens, you know, stress. Life stress. It's hard to be the sculpted person that you could be when you were in your 20s. And if you're constantly feeling like you're at odds with 20-year-olds, there's not much happiness there because you'll never be able to compete with them. They're frightening. They're frightening people. From a sexualized society, they will always win. And so you have to remove yourself from that by being a better person. We are all trying to transcend. And it's all done within that larger context. Marriage and family makes us all better people. It helps us transcend, you know. Your husband is going to love you when you're 80. Your husband is going to love you and tell you how beautiful you are when all of your hair falls out from chemotherapy. Your husband is going to be there and hold you and hug you when one of your children dies. When the worst things happen in life, the full stature of manhood brings us together, makes us better, makes us stronger. Where these are the kinds of things where if you're dealing with boys, they're going to run away. They're going to find something that's a little more pleasant, pleasurable, better on the eye. Makes you look more like a big guy, you know. Gorgeous women hang, you know, hang off your shoulders when you go out to cocktail parties. Blah, blah, blah. Childish stuff. And that's all that we see gayness really doing, is that's just another interesting manifestation of childishness. I consider the whole thing of shacking up with your, I don't want to call it a lover, with your pleasure mate. That probably sounds more probably is pretty close to what it is. With your pleasure partner and playing house, you know, that's all what this is. You know, marriage is just like two little five-year-old kids mimicking what they saw other adults doing. Seeing what adults do and trying to mimic that and wanting to be treated like that's an important thing, you know. That's all I see. It's just children. It says, we need to rise. You need to rise. I'm running out of time. I promised my wife I'd wake her up at 6. You need to rise from this state. Rise from... You can do better. You can simply do better. And that's what the book's all about. It's what Full Stature Manhood about. Is about being encouraging and about saying you can... if you can't get the ideal because of choices you've made in the past, that's okay. Go for the optimal. Go for the optimal. You know, for any man that sits before me, I can say one thing. I can say several things, but here's the one important thing I can say. No matter what you've done in the past, you can stop doing it. And you can choose a better course. If you go, if I've been gay, I've been practicing gay, I picked up some weird disease along the way, there's a lot of things that are closed to you now. But the one thing you can definitely do is you can choose to marry a woman you may not be immediately sexually attracted to her. You know, it may not be a point of leering, ooh, she made my head turn. It may not be that. You may have to look a little deeper. You may have to look a little further inside for things that you say, I really love you because you're like this. If you're saying, I can only love those of my same gender, it's like saying, I only live in this third world country and I will never leave, even if there's a wonderful opportunity ahead. I will give it up because I've decided that this is what defines me. I'm going to stay here in squalor because I've chosen to wear that title around my neck. I've come from a place of squalor. This is, you know, rise from that. Only a person who has risen, only a person who has transcended even a little can help other people do the same thing. You cannot help people from behind. You have to help them from ahead. Come, follow me. That was what Christ said. Christ was our ultimate example because he was out ahead of us. He is a transcendent figure. He is the transcendent figure for us. And we need to follow him. Gurus, Muhammad, other kinds of people, prophets even, can let us down. Do we have examples of it? Sure. Even if you say, well, you know, I'm better than Muslims. And you go, be careful about how you say that. You know, Jonah. Was Jonah a great prophet? He had his good times, he had his bad times. You have to understand, Jesus Christ is our perfect example because he is the ultimate transcendent figure. He did not falter. He was never a bad example of anything. He was always just a good example. The only one that there's ever been, as far as my belief system believes. As far as I know. And so we follow him. And that's the advice I have for anybody who tries to wear that thing around their neck. When Christians call themselves sinners, I cringe. Stop saying that. Rise above that. That may be step one, two, or three in you getting to where you need to be. Sometimes we have to knock you down a little bit to be able to build you up the kind of person that you need to become. And sitting there saying I'm a sinner is an excuse. for not doing good, not trying a little more. You need to try a little bit more. Try harder. Make improvements every day. Okay? That's why I said, you know what? If you follow Muhammad, it's probably better than other choices you could make. But Jesus Christ is a better example. If you follow him, you'll get further, because you won't get caught in what happens if Muhammad said, hey, look at my life, look at how wonderful it is, don't you want this too? And people attach themselves to that. If you did have problems, if you did have shortcomings, you're going to be worshiping the shortcomings too. And with Christ, you don't have that. There are no shortcomings to it. Now, you could say he's a mythical figure, whatever. But it's nonetheless it is transcendence. Wherever you need to get to, so that you start to transcend, you start to do better, you start taking on these higher roles, you start becoming a man. That's what you need to do, and hopefully you'll be led to the right place to go. I got led to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In fact, I came back to it. It was there already. And when I look out at everything else, I just look at it. It's like being on top of a mountain. It's really obvious when you're looking at things that are lower, when you're up at the top, because you're looking down. And every place I've looked, it's down. You know, when people say, oh, you need to become a different form of Christianity because it's better. Yours is wrong, ours is right. And I'm sorry, when I'm looking down. I go, how could going down possibly be the right thing to do? How could that possibly be it? That may be true if you are engaged in something just evil. And you need to stop doing evil. You know, that's true. But it's not. So anyway, I got to stop now. 51 minutes in, and I'm sure this didn't do that, but hopefully I got a few ideas down that I can use in my book, because I think that's what we need to be working on right now. Is the full stature of manhood. Wonderful book, wonderful story. We'll put it out on the regular thing. We'll put it out on Amazon for people who want to pay the price to get it on their portable device. It'll also be on the website for free. You can just read it. You know, these are not concepts that I want you to have to buy to get, although you can choose to. You know, and that does me if you want to buy it and do it that way, it's great. I'll put it on a donation page to tell people, you know. I don't know if I want to donate. I just want people to change and get better. If they want to pay me to do that, that's awesome. You know. Writer, lecturer, speaker, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So anyway, that's it. That's my recording for today. Sometimes I'll transfer this over to the other computer, to the server, so people can have it. Anyway, it's Jason Denbrough. Have a great day.